Hey, how you doing? This is RJ. So today I have a topic which, quite honestly, I really don't want to cover, but I think I need to cover because you're going to see more and more of it and people need to understand where this comes from. And the topic is the increasingly disturbing feminist-based fetishization that you're going to see within books, stories, movies, games, all of your entertainment. Now, I'm sure more than one person is saying to themselves, RJ, we already see this. We already know it's out there. We already know it's coming. But I'm focusing on something very specific, an expansion of the entire thing in a very certain direction. And what is that direction? That direction is, well, let's just say female intimacy with monsters. Within comics, you've already seen hints of this several years ago. One that I covered, which was the Wonder Twins, when they had a miniseries coming out. The recent Baldur's Gate game had this within it as part of its storyline. I also covered probably about 6 months ago one of the new D&D manuals that covers several pages of this exact subject. But the big story in the last couple of weeks is the promotion of entire sections of these books specifically within your local bookstores. So all of the other examples that I've given you were in niche storytelling venues. But now you have big name bookstores, quite literally, making sections for this type of book. And I want to look at where this comes from, its proximate origin, why you see this expansion of it at this time, and what exactly it means for our entertainment and really for our culture. And to do all that, of course, to prepare you and myself for the increasing onslaught of this type of thing that we're going to see. But before we get there, if you want some actual wholesome entertainment, there are links in the description for my stories, my comics, my graphic novels. They center around the traditional idea of a hero, which is a paragon of virtue. And although I never shy away, and I make no bones about it, I never shy away from portraying beautiful women. That's just a part of life. I always ensure that my stories are for all audiences, including children. And you're never going to see the immorality within mainstream entertainment within my books. There is a link at the top for the new book that will be coming out, which is Fade to Blue. You can leave your email at that sign-up page and you will be informed when the project goes live. There is also Crom the Destroyer, which we're still working on, which is a fantasy book, and my two superhero graphic novels, Thomas Valiant and The Valiant Heroes, both of which you can order from The Valiant Heroes Indiegogo site right now. And you're looking at some of the beautiful art from all of those projects in the background. So if any of that looks or sounds appealing to you at all, click on one of those links in the description and go on over and see if my graphic novels are for you. But back to our topic. So as not to bury the lead, as usual, I'll give you right up front why I'm talking about this. What is the endpoint? The endpoint and the answer to all of this is that feminism, which makes up the taproot of progressivism, needs to expand its control in the present moment in a very specific way. And that's what progressivism is all about. It's all about power. It's all reducible to power. And control is a part of that power. And they're trying to exercise this power, again, in a specific way in order to progress their political ideology as it has gotten to the point where they need to shift gears right now. So we're going to go through that and the origin of that to begin with, especially as concerns books and entertainment. So why did I start thinking about this? Well, I watched a Clownfish TV video, and I don't watch Clownfish very much because they tend to ramble on and on and on, and that's really something coming from me. So you got the guy and his wife talking about this exact story about these kinds of sections of so-called romance stories going into normal bookstores. And at the same time, also talking about the fact that you had some authors right now putting out tweets saying, where is all the male-based, or at the very least, male-attractive science fiction and fantasy? You can't see it anywhere in your bookstore. Stories that are going to attract boys, young men, it's just not there. And yet you now get entire sections devoted to this so-called romance subgenre, which is basically a fetish. And the fellow who runs Clownfish, he said, I don't understand. What the heck is going on here? But his wife knew exactly what was going on. She said to him, don't you know that the majority of books sold to women are romance novels? And when you say romance novels, what you basically mean is female pornography. She even related a story about when her grandmother died and they started to go through her stuff and there were a whole bunch of romance novels and someone picked one up and started reading it. And they went, no, stop. You can't read that. There are children here. And very briefly, I was looking up some statistics for romance novels. Romance novels are supposed to be the second highest seller of all fiction books. Some of the other links that popped up said in their articles that of all paperback books that are sold, over 33% of them are romance novels. Another headline saying, even as overall book sales are declining, romance novels are increasing. And there's a third article that pops up saying, romance novels reign supreme in U.S. book sales. And quite honestly, on that Clownfish TV video, I had to post a comment saying, well, duh, you're actually covering a headline in your video, which came out a couple of days ago, that should have been a headline in the early 2000s. Now, I'll give you my personal experience with the whole book publishing system in order to give you a little bit of background about this, and I'll go over it with speed. In the early 2000s, I wrote a novel manuscript, mostly prompted by my girlfriend at the time because she was a big reader. She got me to read some books which were number one bestsellers so she could have someone to talk to about them. And I read these books and they were okay, but I said to myself, if this is a number one seller, I can do that. And I've always been a writer, so I gave it a shot. And I wrote a novel manuscript and I had it professionally edited after I was done. I think we went through, what, 6 edits? So a lot of work went into this. And then I tried to get it published. Now, here's a little preview of where I'm going with this entire thing. If you've listened to my channel and listened to these people who control the comic book industry, they're always talking about gatekeeping and how they supposedly have to get rid of gatekeeping that occurred for the last 50 years plus within comics, when really what they're trying to do is to put in their own gatekeepers so that they can gatekeep the entire comic book industry. Now, where would they come up with such an idea? It didn't just pop into their heads. They came up with such an idea because that's how the book industry actually exists and works. So for the book industry itself, let's say you're an author and you write a novel manuscript. You have to write the entire thing first. You have to. And then you have to get it professionally edited. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of paying other people to do stuff for you to get this thing into shape. Then what do? Do you bring it to the book publishers so that it can be published or see if they want to publish it? No. No, first you have to get an agent. There are very, very few book publishers who are going to actually accept a manuscript. So you have to get an agent and you have to get the agent to sell it to the book publishers, and the book publishers will then see if they want to publish it. But in order to get an agent first you have to query for an agent. Now, querying is a special skill in itself, completely separate from being a writer. You need to condense your entire story down to about 1, maybe 2 paragraphs. At most, the query letter that you're going to send out to agents to see if they want to take you on as a client is about a page. So, really, you have to develop this special skill to write query letters to make them as attractive as possible. Sometimes you just send the letter, sometimes you send 1 or 2 chapters with the letter to agents to see if they want to take you on as a client, and you have to do this cold. And once they agree, if they do agree to take you on as a client, then they will try to take your book and sell it to various publishers. Then once the publishers actually agree to that, then they're going to see whether or not there's a market for it and try to publish your story. So it is a system of gatekeeping, to say the least. And if it was based on merit, I would have no problem with it. But it's not based on merit anymore, and it hasn't been for some time. And I learned this the hard way when I tried to sell, or at the very least, get an agent to sell my novel manuscript. I had various editors, some of them published authors, some of them just professional editors, some of them indie authors. I was told it was a fairly good manuscript. Now, maybe I'm delusional, I don't know. But the fact is that when I went to query these agents, I found out something very specific, which meant my novel was never going to be published. It was the fact that, I would say bare minimum, 90% of all agents are women. And of those women, the majority of them are feminist, especially if you're concentrating on fiction stories, and that fiction is included in the genres of science fiction and fantasy. Now again, remember, I'm talking about the early 2000s, and I found out the hard way that no agent was ever going to take on my manuscript. Why? Because it was a male protagonist that acted in a male way. He had a girlfriend who was a very feminine girlfriend, and the structure of the entire story was based around family. And quite honestly, in order to find these agents, you got to go look for them, usually on the internet now, and they will give you a breakdown of who they are and what they're looking for, because they don't want to waste their time. They want to ensure that the only things that are sent to them are the things that they're looking for. So they give you very clear specifics about what they want, what they're looking for, what they want to promote in order to publish. And of these agents, 90% being female, again and again and again, what you would see would either be the straight-up assertion that they're looking to publish feminist books, or the light-handed way of saying it, which is, I concentrate on women's fiction. So that's my background and my bias to the entire situation. Give you that right up front. Now, very briefly, why do you have so many women in these positions? Well, it's the same reason why you have a majority, let's say, within Marvel Comics, of women doing the editing. It's because, within the last 25, 30 years, The majority of the people going to universities have been women. Those women are studying increasingly useless degrees. As such, they usually take something like a minor in literature, because most women going to university are probably going to be bookworms to begin with. And so they get out into the real world, and what do they have to fall back on for their degree in order to get a job, in order to do something? Well, they use their minors to fall into the book industry, becoming agents or editors, not creatives usually, but people who control and deal with the structure of publishing. And a few other things to point out. Number one, if they've gone through the university system in order to get to this point, they're going to be indoctrinated with feminist ideology, because again, most of these useless degrees that females tend to gravitate towards within universities are of that ilk. And by the way, I should point out this for later as well. What kind of women are you going to get in these positions? Well, you get the kind of women who can go to university and spend massive amounts of money on a useless degree. What kind of women do you think those are? Well, they would be privileged white women. All right, so let's move on by taking a detour just for a moment. Let's talk about the comic industry. The comic industry, especially Marvel, which is the big boy on the block, wanted to revamp its entire way of making comics right down to the bones around 2009, 2010. So about 15 years ago. Now, we know how they did that if you listen to my videos. They concentrated on political ideology, a very specific political ideology, which is progressivism, which again has its taproot as feminism. And I've gone through so many Marvel podcasts where you have literally groups of editors talking about feminist ideals that they placed within the books. And you have now so many writers within comics that were once novel writers and were brought up in the other system, which is the system controlled by this feminist agent gatekeeping, people like Margaret Stoll, G. Willow Wilson, Marika Tamaki. But that's sort of beside the point right now. We also have to look at the structural differences that they made and how they went to sell their comics. Basically, they looked at the balance sheet and said, which of these things that we produce gives us the most money for the least amount of work? And it was quite simple. It was graphic novels and trades, which they could call graphic novels. And where would they be sold? Where they would get the most amount of money? Well, they would be sold in bookstores. Not in specialty stores, which comic stores are part of specialty stores. No, within regular bookstores. The example of this that I'm always talking about was about 6 years ago, I covered a Comic-Con, I think it was New York Comic-Con, where the second in command at Marvel and the panel of some of the aforementioned people that I just talked about were asked if the insertion of progressivism into their storylines was killing comic books. And the answer was no. And part of the reason why it was no was because she said, we are going to compile these stories into a trade and then we sell them. And we're going to make more money that way, selling them to bookstores, libraries, schools, library associations, traveling book merchants like Scholastic. But of all of those, the bookstore, the actual chain bookstore that sells actual books, is the big seller, is where you rope in the normies, because you don't care about your base comic book reader who actually likes comics. We know this from statements from people like, I think it was Kelly Sudokanik, or it might have been Kelly Thompson, saying, it's quite okay when you write stories to chip away at the tentpole of comics, which is your straight white males who are comic, floppy comic buyers. They don't care about those people anymore because they're going to make their money in the bookstore, selling it to people who are not comic fans, who are people that walk into a bookstore and want to buy a book. And there were many podcasts where they talked about that specific thing, about not talking about comics as comics anymore, but talking about them as graphic novels so that they can be included simply within normal book sales. Why? Because they wanted them included within normal bookstores. And I would say the exact same thing happened for D&D and D&D-like products. If you grew up in the 80s with D&D around you, let's say second edition, for my own part, I never saw any of those books in a bookstore. You had to go to specialty stores in order to find those. Either comic shops or some kind of knick-knack shop where you'd find someone who actually played D&D just selling it because they loved it so much they wanted other people to see it. You would never find that stuff in an actual bookstore. But by the time you got to third edition, they were in actual bookstores. And there was a switch over there. And when you look at the difference between the books themselves from second edition to third edition, you see that third edition D&D books are presented in a much different way. They're presented almost as an art book. Because who in the world is going to walk into a bookstore who doesn't know anything about D&D and pick up this manual, which is what D&D basically is, they're all manuals, with a couple of comic book scratchy sketches within the pages and go, oh, that's something I want to buy. No, no. They had to present it in a way where it was a flashy magazine-style page art book which had rules sandwiched in between the art. Why? Because they're selling it in a bookstore now. They're not selling it to the fans anymore. They're selling it to the general public because the general public makes up a much larger number than the actual fans. And so that's the audience you want to target. And the point of why I'm going over comics and D&D getting into bookstores is because if you look at, even from the 2000s onwards, the structure of the books that were going into bookstores, they were directly influenced by the gatekeepers, who were majority female feminists, ensuring that women's fiction and feminist fiction was what majority was going to be on your shelves. And if you're someone like the comic book industry or D&D or other kinds of properties like D&D, and you're desperately trying to hold on to your shelf space within a normal bookstore, what are you going to do? We are going to take your source material and bend it towards the exact same thing that you're going to see on the shelves next to it. Because again, you're going to get these female readers walk into the bookstore looking for their women's fiction, and they're going to run across your book, and you need to attract those people. Now, at the same time, you have to add into this entire thing the increasing, ever-increasing romance novel sales. So let's see if this sounds familiar to you. I know I've said this, have you? You're looking at some of this stuff that is coming out from your beloved hobby, whether it be comics or D&D, it doesn't matter. And you're saying to yourself, why in the world are they producing this garbage? Why don't they give the audience what they want? Well, here's the thing. They are doing exactly that. They're giving their audience what they want. The point is, you're not their audience. You may be a fan of the genre. You may be a fan of the game. You may be a fan of comics. You may be a hardcore believer and want to see these things do as well as possible. But the straight up fact of the matter is, you make up a minority of the people that they want to attract. The majority of the people that they want to attract are the women who walk into bookstores looking for primarily romance novels. And of course, because of the structure of the gatekeeping going into publishing to begin with, in order to get onto a mainstream bookstore shelf, you're going to get stories that are bent towards this feminist ideology. So more and more, you're going to get the source material, let's say Marvel Comics, producing these kinds of stories because they want them to be turned into trade paperbacks and graphic novels so that they can be sold on the shelves of your local bookstore. Same thing with your D&D manuals. Now, let's look at the other side of this entire thing, why this is an evolving process and why you see the exact kind of subject matter being pushed right now. Well, it all comes down to your feminist ideology and how far it has progressed, or I would think of it more as metastasized, into your culture. And within the span of time between, let's say, 2010 and 2020, it was focusing on women's romance that were women with other women. Why? Because that's what feminism wanted to produce at that time. Before that time, going back into the 90s and even the mid-80s, you're going to see high heel feminism. That is to say, females using their sexual allure in order to control men. That's the kind of stories that you would get. But within 2010 to 2020, you're going to get female and female romances. Why? Because at that time it was, okay, we're now not just in control of men, but we can discard them. And quite literally, it doesn't matter what title that you're going to pick up of, let's say, Marvel Comics from 2010 to 2020, you're going to see an ever-increasing number of women being attracted to women. And at the same time, you're going to see white males being portrayed as the villains, always, and males of other kinds being feminized in order for your feminism to maintain control over those non-white males. Because remember, it's all about power. Quite honestly, I find it funny. There was a legislator who was just going through this examination of DEI programs within, I don't remember what legislator it was, somewhere in the US. And he was going through study after study to prove the fact that, does DEI actually help minority groups? And the answer was no. He showed that DEI doesn't help minority groups. Who it helps the most is white women. And not only that, but the studies also showed that when asked, white women knew exactly why they were supporting DEI. It was because it would allow them more and more control. And again, go back to what I just talked about a few minutes ago. What kind of women are going to get into the agent and editorial process? Whether the kind of women who can go to university and squander their money on useless degrees. What kind of women, traditionally, are they within North American society? Well, they're white, middle-class women. So, the ideology, as expressed within stories between 2010 and 2020, was fairly simple. You're going to see the following earmarks. Number one, you're going to see white males either as portrayed as buffoons or as straight-up evil. This is to erode the confidence of white males so that they do not claim their power. You see women, especially white women, as the Mary Sue saviors who are going to make everything correct. And you see non-white males as subservient to the female quote-unquote hero, mostly by making them effeminate in some way. And that's the actual nub of the entire thing. You see, one of the systems of control that they were using, although it was a secondary system of control, was to use minority groups to help beat down white males to make sure that they don't rise and claim their power. Because again, the entire thing is simply a power struggle because everything in their minds is reduced to power. Plus, you have the ever-increasing storyline of these female Mary Sues being attracted to other females because, straight up, men are useless, therefore don't even include them in your romance subplot. And that brings us to today. Basically, between 2020 and 2025, why do you get to see this increasing concentration of females being intimate with monsters? And again, we've seen this over and over again. We saw it several years ago with the DC Comics Wonder Twin miniseries. We saw it in the recent Baldur's Gate game that came out. We saw it in one of the recent D&D manuals, where they had an entire section about how to be intimate with monsters. And we now have it breaking into the mainstream bookstore sections, because it's an entire section within your bookstore. Why do we see this increasingly disturbing fetish? Well, for one very simple reason. This is what feminism needs right now. How and why? Well, it's very specific. It's because, if you've been paying attention at all within science fiction and fantasy weird happenings over the last 10 years, you know that feminists see monsters, and aliens would just be a subcategory of monsters, but feminists see monsters as equivalent to, and sometimes just directly equal, with non-white minority groups, especially with black people. And that's not me saying that, that's them straight up saying that themselves. The last time one of the Predator movies came out, I covered an article which was a mainstream article within a Hollywood newspaper talking about how Hollywood should no longer have aliens within any of their movies because, according to, quite literally, according to feminist ideology, all aliens are simply a coded representation for black people. Their basic argument was that black people were alienated from their homeland, brought over as slaves from their homeland, alienated from it in that way, but also kept here so that they could not return, so alienated in another way from their homeland. Therefore, all aliens are a stand-in for the most alienated people, subgroup, culture that there is, and that would be people who are descendants of black African slaves. That was their literal argument within the article. And if you want to move on to something more recent, let's look at the recent shift within the D&D manuals and how they're trying to get rid of orcs. Why are they getting rid of orcs? Well, because the people, the feminists who run these book publishing companies, which include D&D right now, are saying, no, no, you can't have orcs anymore because they are a representation of black people. Again, not me saying this. This is quite literally the people who are producing these books under feminist ideology. So again, back to the original question. Why are you seeing more and more of this disturbing fetish of women being intimate with monsters at your bookstore, within your comic books, within your video games, within your television and movies? Why? Because we've moved into a different stage of feminism. And that different stage of feminism is one wherein the feminists, which are the white women who believe in feminism, must have more and more control over the minority groups that they have brought into their country in order to put down white males. We might not be able to see this as pronounced in North America, but look at some place like England right now. These massive amounts of migrants from non-white countries are invited by progressivism, doesn't matter what party it is, into the country in order to beat down the white population, in order to make sure they are subservient and never rise to any kind of power again. And they've done a spectacular job of it. The white population is so demoralized that they're literally handing to these minority groups the very weapon they need to beat them down with. But having done that, they now need a way to control these minority groups. And again, what you see within the pages of these stories is control of minority groups. That's what it is. These feminists quite literally equate monsters with black people and other kinds of minority groups, but especially black people. Again, not me saying that. This is them, their own articles, their own journals saying this over and over again. And so, if you can take those monsters and fantasize about them in a way wherein you can control them in the most intimate of ways, that is your blueprint for what you want to happen in the future. Or to put it in another way, this is basically priming the pump for all of these women who are feminists and future feminists to get their mind aligned with the idea that no, we have to actually control these minority groups. And so you're going to have to back what we want, let's say within laws, or other systems of control, so that we can place these minority groups under our thumb of control in order to ensure that feminism stays on top. In order to control them, if the progressives are going to actually still maintain control of political systems and then seek to control these minority groups, they're going to have to become more and more draconian. Therefore, they need to prime the pump to make sure their base voter, which is your feminist woman, your white middle-class feminist woman, is going to support that. How better to do that by to feed them with the drivel of control in the most intimate of way in these fetish-driven forms of entertainment that they're going to continue to increase and increase in number. And that, quite literally, is what is going on and why you see these stories infiltrating, well, not just infiltrating, but completely taking over comics, video games, novels, board games, movies, television, every form of entertainment that you're going to look at. You're going to see it. And the reason why I am covering this is, again, to show you what is going to happen in the near future, because I always concentrate on the idea of the traditional hero, the paragon of virtue, and you're going to need some heroic fortitude to not just get through this, but to fight against it. So, if I've given you anything new to think about, hit like, hit the shield in the lower right-hand corner of your screen to subscribe, and leave me a comment. Tell me what you think about all this. And don't forget, there is a link in the description for the sign-up page for Fade to Blue, my new books that are coming out. If you leave your email there, you will be informed when the project goes live. This one will be available digitally. And there are also links for my other graphic novels and comics. So click on those links in the description and go on over and take a look at some wholesome entertainment after having to listen to the disturbing facts that I have just given you for the last, half hour. All right, I'll leave it there. I'll see you later. Bye.